2011.
Being investigated by the FBI.
Yeah, under unwarranted surveillance and secret documents.
Under President Obama. Jose Antonio Vargas.
I mean, one of my biggest worries here right now is what the state of undocumented immigrants in this country, right? Kind of the mental trauma that is happening right now. I just mentioned a few minutes ago, 750,000 people is a lot of people, right? And now the government has their names, their addresses.
And these are the people.
These are the young people who are brought here as children, right, who are now working in parts of our own communities. And the government has all of their information. Mm-hmm. So what happens when Donald Trump is president on day one?
Because it came out through a kind of executive order, executive
action. He has said that he would take back.
Last words, look, John Nichols.
There are moral duties here. And we are talking about people who have been targeted. Let us be very, very clear. This administration will attack the trade union movement in this country. Yeah. This administration will attack organizations with substantial numbers of white men in it. And the fact of the matter is, our response to this ought to be massive. It ought to be in the streets, but it also ought to hold the Democratic Party to account. They have a filibuster power in the Senate. We have two Senate seats still unsettled. Simple reality is that that no must resonate in the streets and in Washington.
We just got a Twitter question. How can we restore the Voting Rights Act? We'll leave it there. Marissa Franco, John Nichols, Linda Sarsour, Jose Antonio Vargas, Nicole Hannah-Jones, Wayne Barrett, thanks for joining us. This is Democracy Now! Check out our second hour at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Aftermath, part of the Brown Paper series produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs November 28th at 7 p.m. at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. In Mary Burrell's 1919 one-act, John Thornton, a young black soldier who has served his country in World War I, comes home to rural South Carolina. His homecoming is disrupted when he learns that someone close to him has been lynched by a white mob. Again, that's Aftermath, produced by Triangle Productions, November 28th at 7 p.m. at The Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Finance Committee meets the third Wednesday of each month at 4:30 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held. To request notice of board meetings in writing, please email Monica at kboo.org.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, accessories, and gifts with a focus on U.S.-made and certified fair trade natural fiber clothing since 1984. Gazelle is located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at GazelleNaturalFiberClothing.com.
There is a war between the ones I live here with a woman and a child. The situation makes me kind of nervous. Yes, I rise up from her arms. She says, I guess you call this love. I call it room service. But don't you come on back to the woman, to the wall. What don't you come on back to the woman, to the wall. You cannot stand what I've become. You much preferred that gentleman I was before. So easy to defeat, it was so easy to control. I didn't even know there was a war. But don't you come on back to the man, to the wall. But don't you come on back to the man, to the wall.
And good morning. Here we are. This is Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Paul Rowland, be with you until 9 o'clock, when there will be another hour of call-ins and live discussion on the same topic that I assume everybody is going to want to be talking about. This morning, my co-host, Jacqueline Keeler, is apparently stuck in traffic coming in from the west side of town. Hopefully she will show up at some point here during the program, hopefully sooner than later. Here we are. Many of us were pretty much resigned to a Hillary Clinton presidency and thinking, at least there'll be some room to, keep mobilizing on racial justice, environmental justice, the climate, police killings, and everything else, keep pushing from the left and all that, but things are different now. So looks pretty bleak, frankly, but there it is, and here we are. And I don't know if people listened to the Democracy Now! Coverage yesterday evening. Amy Goodman just played a relatively short clip from Alan Nairn. I caught most of what he was talking about. I thought he was one of the more spot-on people looking at overall perspective. Said a lot of things that are really worth looking at. He was talking about, obviously, the FBI apparent complicity in this. Of course, he was had also been talking about the rampant disenfranchisement and all the different stratagems that Greg Palast has been talking about. But, that doesn't explain it all. He also said something very important that although we are becoming a much more multiracial, multicultural nation, 60% of the electorate is still European Americans, white folks. And a lot of them have stopped voting, have become alienated from whatever the system, the process, that they don't vote anymore. And so he said, what Trump had to do, and I'm sure he had people, his advisors, himself, thinking about this, that he had to swing, 5 or 10% of those people who hadn't been participating, who might have voted for somebody different, and that would be it. And that's, on top of all the machinations, the ending of the Voting Rights Act, the suppression of votes, all the different things that do add up to basically a rigged system. And of course, on top of that, trumpeting this whole idea of a rigged election as if he was the target of it, that just served to mask and sort of give him cover. So, and as Alan Nairn said, I think maybe perhaps the most cogent thing that he said in the quote that just aired on Democracy Now!, How did Democrats, official Democrats respond to that? By saying, no, it's not rigged. And it just gave them more, in some ways, more ammunition. It's very, very deeply psychological phenomenon here. The I've used the term Americaners, to correspond to the term Afrikaners, the white ruling minority. Of course, here it's a white ruling majority by virtue of the vast demographic expansion that ensued upon European colonization and genocide displacement of the native peoples, and of course carrying the enslaved African peoples, who grew into a significant minority, but always a deeply suppressed minority. That the Americaners, we have to be really, this is the moment to at least come to grips with social realities, whatever else, wherever else we're going to do, however else we're going to respond to this. I think that is of extreme urgency, that we cast aside our final illusions about the nature of the society that we live in. The idea of progressive reformism and sort of superficial, betterment of way of life and all the stuff that just masks the deeper, sordid reality of basically viciousness, I would say, essentially. Anyway, I'm hoping Jacqueline will come along and I won't have to engage with you all by myself, since she did start to be a co-host on a monthly basis. And this is her morning. And we do have a caller already, I believe. Camilo, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
I want to first pay you a compliment, and it's that I think of the five hosts of the call-in programs, you are the most suited one to conduct this sharing of our reaction to what occurred because of your temperament and your values and the way that you...
Well, I don't want to get into a comparison thing with other, KBOO talk show hosts, but anyway, thanks for your kind words.
Well, what I want to speak to is the issue of identity politics, and I think that this election betrays the danger that is in identity politicking. And I want to reach out to all of the people who consider themselves oppressed minorities and share my concern, my grief, my mourning with you. I have heard many other people come on the radio and say, well, I'm a privileged person. I really don't have to worry. And that's true of me. I'm retired. I have enough to take care of myself. But I am concerned about people who were oppressed, and include in that the white working class, who will soon learn that they will be betrayed by the people that... they think represent them in politics. And my main concern about the consequences of the election are for climate change. And I am a Buddhist at the Shambhala Center, and we are organizing a group, a practice meditation group that will deal with the issue. And we're going to have a planning meeting at Shambhala on November 20th at 1 o'clock. Shambhala is at 1110 Alder Street, Southeast.
All right.
Well. And you're welcome. And we will begin regular practice on the second Wednesday of the month. And if you want to find out more about it, you can go to portland.shambhala.org. Shambhala is spelled S-H-A-M-B-H-A-L-A.
All right.
So, Godspeed, everyone.
Thanks for calling in with that, Camilo. I do think that we are all going to need various modalities for dealing with the stress of what's going to be coming our way in the next weeks, months, years, dare I say it. So, yeah, let's talk about this. 503-231-8187. I saw a post from a local African-American activist on Facebook saying, you know, why are white people crying? You know, organize. I guess it harks back to the old Emma Goldman phrase, don't mourn, organize. I mean, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with crying. That's for darn sure. We need to let it out. We need to express ourselves. But then after we cleanse ourselves in that way, we do have to come face to face with, you know, some really serious things here. I was talking about what Alan Nairn was talking about. He also mentioned, you know, a few other things that really the rest of the world lives politically under something more like a Trump presidency than perhaps an Obama presidency. Although, you know, okay. Well, we've got Jacqueline on the phone, in the car. I'm not sure I like that idea. Be careful with that, Jacqueline, but I guess she's probably got a headset on. Anyway, good morning, Jackie.
Hi, good morning, Paul. I'm really sorry about this. I'm stuck in traffic.
That's all right. That's all right. I don't know if you, have you been listening to the show?
Yes, I have. Yes. And I you're very humble, but I do agree with the previous caller.
Well, anyway, there's so many things to talk about. It's, you know, we're all just sort of coming to terms with this. As I said at the outset, you know, a lot of us were really, you know, resigned to a Hillary Clinton presidency, which to many of us was a sort of somewhat of a bitter pill to swallow. But here we are with Trump. So, Jacqueline, I know you've been expressing a lot of stuff on the internet about your reaction to this. Give us your initial reaction.
Well, I think that, you know, what I did say and what I'm working on an article about is the fact that I feel like, for me, the real election that reflects who I am as a person is the one going on in Standing Rock in North Dakota, where, you know, Indian people and our allies are voting with our feet and even our virtual feet by checking in on Facebook with Standing Rock. And to me, that is, you know, at times like this, it always makes me feel like my identity as a Dakota woman or as a Diné woman is way more relevant to me and reflects much more, you know, my feelings, my ideas about who I am and the community that embraces me. I think that, you know, when I look at the stats on the white vote, it's really frightening because you realize that like one out of every two white people you might meet supported Trump, and that's the country we live in. And it's not a country that my ancestors ever chose to be a part of. It's a country that occupies our land. As you see in North Dakota, they still occupy them by military force, you know, in violation of international treaties. And now Trump is talking about violating more treaties, and even has spoken years about terminating tribes. And I think with I call the United States a colonial society, a colonial power without portfolio, meaning it doesn't actually have a homeland, it doesn't have a place, it occupies our land and invites people to come and take part in that occupation. And, you know, and it's an unfair system. That's why you have this huge, you know, the Trump vote going on, because many, many people came to participate in the quote unquote American dream are not, that dream is not happening for them. I think that as Native people, we have stories about who we are that tell us who we are. And those stories are true stories. If you know the creation stories of your people, they will correctly inform you about your community, about how to be in that community, and the results you get will make sense. The issue with the United States is that they have false mythologies about their origin story. And so people have this story that they're supposed to be part of the success story, and it doesn't happen for them, and they don't understand why, because the true story is a story of colonialism. And I think that's what's been very, very much revealed. I mean, the language that Trump is using is the language of fascism, you know, of nationalism, of xenophobia, you know, and those are, that's, fascism really happens, you know, in the countries where empires emerge out of, like Spain and Germany, you know, I mean, this is, and for a colony who is without portfolio, without a homeland, a true homeland of their own, it's really, they're holding a building, a wall and everything. It's incredibly revealing.
Totally. It's, you know, I think I don't want to be stereotypical, and I know that, you know, people are not all one thing all the time, but, you know, if you get a bunch of people together, like in those Trump rallies that were all together, too eerily reminiscent of things like Nuremberg rallies, that they, you know, the denial of reality is just multiplied. And I think people, you know, when they're scared, when they see the foundations crumble of this, you know, this of this imperial colonial enterprise, they see cracks opening up, they'll do anything but actually face the real origins of it and turn to people like Trump. It's really there's a whole thing back and forth about, you know, parallels to Weimar Republic and parallels to this and that. But, you know, I mean, these dynamics are there's similar dynamics when you have these big mass societies that are incapable of maintaining, you know, the style of life that were built on colonialism empire. Similar things always happen. But let's go to our first caller in. Corey, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning, Paul. I woke up this morning, got to the coffee shop about 6, and I'm a man of color. I'm a black male, and there was a young man at the coffee shop that I go to, and I see him every morning, and he's a white guy, and he literally started sobbing. And I told him, hey, look, man, you know, I should be the one crying. I am not a Trump supporter, but I am a black man living in America. So, you know, I hope, you know, he gave me a hug. And I'm trying to find some sort of almost humor in this, because this is funny, but it's also scary. I've had emails and Facebook messages from my Muslim and Latino friends, and they're literally frightened because this is not the country that they thought they were in. Trump played on people's fears, and a large part of this electorate are scared white people, and he played on those fears. He demonized Muslims, he demonized Latino people, but if you look at these rural areas, that fear is out there, and he capitalized on that. I didn't think that he could do this. I'm also a veteran. I don't agree with what he's done. I don't agree with him politically, but as a black male who's fought for this country, I'm someone who is I am going to respect the presidency, because I remember in 2008 being in Texas, where I'm from, when Obama won, hearing some of the rhetoric about how he's going to destroy this country, et cetera, et cetera. And I also think that we are a very negative country. I think it's a country we're fine for some people. I feel like I am fine. Financially, I am a person of color in a good position. But that's not the feeling for a lot of people. And finally, as far as Hillary Clinton, I honestly feel like I didn't choose Hillary Clinton. I was a Bernie supporter. I think that if you look at what the DNC did, if you look at some of the machinations of Deborah Wasserman Schultz, Donna Brazile, I believe, got the only candidate that was going to lose to Donald Trump. I honestly can't believe that if Bernie was the candidate, even if Joe Biden was the candidate, we would have gotten this result. I'm not a Hillary basher. I just feel as that she had so much baggage, and I don't dislike Hillary Clinton. I think she's an amazing woman. Do I feel like she was going to get over, and with the media being complicit, I don't think she, I knew in my heart of hearts, sadly, that she wasn't going to win. And I hate saying that. I voted for her. But I'm not surprised at this outcome, because I'm a black man that lives in America.
All right. Well, thanks for that.
Thanks.
All right. That's Corey calling in. The Clintons, you know, There's another thing that Naren was talking about, you know, the look at the history of the Democratic Party over the past 40, 50 years. After McGovern lost, you know, to Nixon in a landslide, the Democratic Party shifted dramatically whitewards. Even more after Carter lost his second term to Reagan, who, you know, initiated a lot of what's gone on with the, you know, the neocons. Then Clintonism sealed it, basically. So, you know, the Clintons, whoops. I don't know which one that was. Oh, we lost Jackie. Hopefully she'll call back. Hopefully she'll show up here herself in person. I hope she's okay. I'm always nervous about people talking on the cell phones, even with the headsets in their cars. But anyway, you know, the Clintons, there's a reckoning there. You know, there's a reckoning for the Democratic Party. Are they going to do it? You know, are the people who, you know, are the liberal class, as Chris Hedges talks about, are they going to have some serious soul searching out of this? I mean, you know, this definitely makes things a lot more difficult. It makes organizing potentially more difficult, maybe easier in some ways. You know, a lot of resistance happens more when you got a really much more obvious enemy. I don't say there's a silver lining in this at all. I think he's a monster. I think he represents America. I think he represents us. We have to take that very seriously. And the idea, you know, the superficial analyses of things, the idea of you know, incremental change through with working within the system, maybe but we have to really examine. You know, we have to maybe listen to the radicals a little more. Our illusions protect us from something. What is it that our illusions protect us from? I think it's from having to confront deeper, painful truths or realizations. What are those truths and realizations? I think we really need to get deeper into this stuff. Oh, here she is. That's why she got off the phone. Morning, Jacqueline. Here, let's get your mic set up. There you go.
That's good.
All right. So, here we are. Let's just go to Joshua while Jacqueline gets settled here. Go ahead, Joshua.
Whoop. Hi. Yes, I appreciate you taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I just want to, I'm asking why, I can't see it any other way. I'm asking everyone, why didn't we wake up scared during the Obama presidency, you know, and with the thought of a continuation of that? You know, I think it's a failure to imagine. You know, to me, what's scary is Obama's expansion way beyond Bush of the drone wars and the people that are under those bombs. We can't imagine that. It's far away. It's not scary to us. Obama's attempt to fast track this horrible trade deal, which is racist, which does affect the most marginalized people around the world, the TPP, appointing Hillary as Secretary of State. You know, the weapons deals that she helped lubricate and was for. You know, this is scary to me. I woke up every day scared that people are not worried, are not concerned. And I just wonder, you know, where is this, you know, the scared meter? How are people quantifying that, you know, the Trump presidency is going to be so much worse? I think the true evil of the neoliberalism of Obama, the hope and change, is that it lulls people to sleep. And we don't really think about what has been going on. You know, under Obama, more people have been deported from this country. Yet we think that, you know, Trump's crazy, insane words, you know, are somehow worse than this actual fact. People were torn from their families, ICE raid, you know. And the thing is, before we start to say, well, Obama was, you know, hamstringed by these obstructionists, the Republicans, you know, look what Bernie Sanders did. He didn't pass a single vote, but he got you know, tens of thousands, if not millions of people to come and meet because of the words he was saying. And Obama just dried up. He did not use that bully pulpit because ultimately he's not for, you know, equality and social justice and change in that way. And Hillary's the same continuation. Her connection to Wall Street is scary to me. I woke up scared that people don't think that her speaking engagements towards these banksters is scary. Her endorsement of fracking, you talk about environmental problems. Why weren't people scared? this is what angers me and what angered me every day. I don't have some sort of scary meter, and the meter's not going back and forth between Trump and Hillary. I'm asking people, how do you quantify that it's scarier to wake up today than to wake up with a Hillary presidency where we can all just go, oh, the bad man's gone, and now we can go to sleep, and the Hillary bumper stickers will get dirty on our bumpers, and we'll just go on comfortable, you know, with the notion that everything is fine, a Democrat got in. And I'm asking, I can't see it any other way.
Let's let Jacqueline weigh in on this.
Yeah, hi. I think that your description's really accurate and really vivid. And yeah, I think that as a Native person, I have never had any illusions that this is about getting an ideal situation. I mean, we've always had to choose the best of two worst situations. And I have no illusions that this is a colonial state. I think that, Bernie's political, you know, direction, which, you know, was to support Hillary to continue the revolution he started, I think is a cogent one. I think that when you talk about what's the difference between Trump and what's the difference between business as usual colonialism in this country, you are talking. I think that fascism is a different beast entirely. We were looking at voting for Obama as someone who would, you know, really begin to change the country, begin to, undo the damage that the Bush administration had done over 8 years. And in many ways, there are elements of it that we cannot, that are really painful to look at, like the drone attacks, which are basically, you know, human rights violations on a massive scale. But with my perspective of Trump is that he's motivated a voter base based on the appeal of the strong man, of the strong white man, and his base are using this vote. They're not participating in the same unpsychologically satisfying democratic process the rest of us are. They are putting in someone who has. I mean, I think that fascism and nationalism and, are just a completely different thing. I think it's very important to know your enemy, to know what they do, how they are, how they're different from each other. And I think this is a very serious step. I don't think that people are overreacting. I think it's incredibly serious when a man who talks about racism the way he does and legitimizes racism the way he does as a candidate. Right now, I think you're going to see thousands of candidates across the country running using that kind of racist language and on every level of government. And it's going to completely change the direction. It's going to undo a lot of the things that we have worked so hard to achieve to become more a more equitable society. I mean, you know, he's already going to appoint one Supreme Court justice and many more. There are, I think, two more Supreme Court justices who are over the age, in their late 80s. And, you know, this is going to have an impact on things for a whole generation. And, we're talking about a loss of a lot of the different rights that we enjoy. As a Native American, as someone who I really feel like my first citizenship is with my nation, the Navajo Nation, and also, you know, the Yahanktawan Dakota, the Ocheti Shakowin. I feel like, I definitely feel like I can't turn. This is not my country. This country is not my country.
Can I ask you, just really curious, you know, Obama's last speech regarding the pipeline where he said he would, you know, I think we need to just wait, and I think there's a compromise for both parties. I thought this was the biggest betrayal, and it exemplified neoliberalism. And that, so it, you know,
I think it exemplifies not neoliberalism. I think it exemplifies the colonial state. This is the colonial state. Okay. This is not a government that's meant to represent my people or even most American people. It's a colonial government meant to represent the 1%. And, you know, I think that basically the mask is being taken off. I was up at Standing Rock and my family, my grandmother's family, lived there for many years in Wakpala. And it's, you know, I definitely look at Native people who are trying to play the game. I, you know, and my family are all looking at that and going, is it even worth it to go and perform for these presidents and put on our regalia and give them names and headdresses? You know, the fact is that they are after our land, they're after our resources, not they individually as human beings, but they as representatives of a colonial system of government. Mm-hmm. And so I think that as long as they are in that position as the head of state of a colonial government, what else are they going to do? You know, I think that you can have soft-pedaled, kind colonialism. Yeah, there's different variations of it, but it's still the whole purpose of it is the extraction of resources, the extraction of wealth, and that is the purpose of a colony. That is the sole purpose of a colony.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it is less scary than
Well, you know, I think they're both scary. I think you're absolutely right. I think that that we shouldn't turn a blind eye on those things, and definitely for me, the drone strikes were things that were very painful to me, and you know, hearing the stories of families that were you know, just innocent people being blown up. I mean, it's horrific, and uh-huh. it is a war crime. But I think that I think under this situation, I am my husband is Six Nations from Canada. His ancestors left the United States. They fought against the colonists during the Revolutionary War, and they lost their land, their homelands in the Mohawk Valley in New York State, and they had to take lands in Ontario from King George III. And so my husband has status at Six Nations in Canada. And in his tribe, they really pursue their sovereignty. I mean, they have their own lacrosse team that competes internationally, usually gets third place in international lacrosse. And they insist on traveling on their own passports. They actually issue their own passports. And so definitely as a political statement of their sovereignty. And so, I think that I'm definitely looking at going to Canada. I don't know. It's, you know, my children, I have teenage Native children. And, you know, I have a son. He is often mistaken for being Arabic. He has a Navajo name, which sounds Arabic. And I fear for him. I mean, this is a legitimization, the open legitimization of bigotry, and my children are in danger. I mean, there is no, you know, I mean, it's, I mean, I used to be afraid because they thought they would put his name on the no-fly list because he had a Arabic-sounding name, and this is the country, this is our country. I mean, I don't feel like I'm a part of this country as a Native woman, a Native mother.
You know, I think what as white people we really do have a hard time is just this kind of thing. It really, all the people of color I've heard so far talk about this have been expressing, you know, these fears of the as you said, the taking the mask off. You know, allowing abusive. I mean, not that there isn't always abusive behavior, but, you know, there has been a certain sort of like increase in sort of expectation of civility, you know, like public on a public sphere. I mean, I think that that has to be acknowledged. That has happened to a large extent, you know.
They get upset calling PCism. They feel constrained by mm-hmm. having to be polite.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So now that's gone. Well, we'll see how much. I mean, this is all going to play out. You know, this is like the first day, so... We don't know, but, you know, people had been experienced already episodes of, you know, there was a black woman, I think she was an African-American woman, a person of color at a Trump rally who was like openly pro-Trump, but also got like almost assaulted. Anyway, there's been many episodes and they're probably getting increased. So anyway, thank you for calling, Joshua.
Yeah, could I say one thing real quick? I'm gone. I was just going to say, you know, Glenn Ford of the Black Agenda Report, a person of color, and I'm not saying it doesn't work this way where I can just say he speaks for everyone. I'm not saying that. I'm a white privileged male myself, but he characterized Obama as the more effective evil. And I do think there is something to that. Anyway, I appreciate you both letting me speak and for having this program.
Well, it all, you know, the future remains as far as, you know, whatever historical comparisons will be made. You know, it's a strange game to sort of take a detached view. But as Jacqueline was saying, you know, there's no other way but to, you know, fight the power more directly.
Well, I think that nationalism, when it raises its head in the country, is really, really dangerous. I mean, you have to realize in Germany, they really felt that that could never happen in their country when it did happen. I mean, they felt themselves to be, I mean, in Berlin, 80% of the people voted against Hitler, you know. I mean, they didn't vote for him, you know, and yet they were, they endured all the results of World War II. You know, most of the women in Berlin were raped, you know. I mean, and of course, the horror of being attached to such a terrible administration, you know. I mean, it's, I think, okay. So I think that, you know, we think it can't happen here. And but then it can, and that's the scary thing, is when someone has the power and has obviously now the political mandate. You know, I mean, I think the Republican Party is just going to cave to him. You know, I don't think they're going to put up a fight. They're going to cater to the same crowd that voted him in.
And they're going to obviously, you know, through the advisors, there are going to be a certain number of them part of the old establishment. They're going to try to shepherd him. Yeah, it's going to be a Frankenstein monster grafted onto each other, but with the Senate and House. So yeah, it's a dismal scenario, but here we are. I mean, we have to keep on. Let's go to our next caller. I believe it was Deanna. Hello? Nope. Go ahead. Who are you?
I'm Norm.
Hi, Norm.
Yeah, hi. You know, I'm choosing not to mourn over much, you know, for Hillary's defeat. You know, she wasn't really going to be much of a president for us anyway. You know, I seem to remember Chris Hedges talking about how little different a Trump presidency would be to a Clinton presidency, and you know, I think the differences between Trump and Hillary are for some part, you know, cosmetic. And I really appreciate the quote from Ms. Goldman: "Don't mourn, don't mourn, organize." And there's a rally that goes on at 5 o'clock. At the southwest corner of Pioneer Square every Friday at 5 p.m., Portland Peaceful Response. And you can stand up against the perpetual war that we would have had with Hillary Clinton if she would have been elected. And,
well, you know, You know, as a Native person, and, you know, I'm like even reading, I used to work at Pacific News Service in San Francisco, and I'm reading like a former editor friend of mine, Andrew Lam. He's a well-known Vietnamese-American writer, and he's writing on Facebook that he had no hangover this morning, no headache. He said, just a strange sobriety chased with despair. You know, I think that for people of color, this is a huge game changer. I mean, this is open racism. There, people are being voting for racism. I mean, this is, you know, I am truly afraid for my children, you know, and, you know, I just can't even imagine. I mean, this is very different. I mean, you know, yes, Hillary Clinton presidency would have been very unsatisfactory on many, many levels. I don't disagree with that at all. I think the system as it's set up is not satisfactory, and does not address, you know, real justice. But this open racism, this is with a threat of violence. I mean, people are, you know, he's threatened all kinds of things, to cancel the Safe Harbor program. He's threatened to do, you know, basically right away, he's going to appoint, a Supreme Court justice. You know, I mean, it's, and possibly two more. He's going to basically really take down, you know, the Affordable Care Act. You know, I mean, and then, of course, you know, his Pence, the Vice President Pence has been very aggressive against, you know, Roe v. Wade. You know, it's all of these things. Are at risk, and the civil society that we built is going to, you know, be taken down. I mean, it's, and our children, brown children, are under threat. I mean, they're shooting up people in churches, you know, and it's, and, you know, it's white privilege is at its high peak. I mean, the Bundys got off without any, you know, without a slap on the wrist, you know, and yet we have
without even a slap on the wrist.
And we have, you know, my people in North Dakota, you know, facing down,
getting fire hosed.
Yes. Armed military response, you know, being, you know, it's just having dogs sicked on them and children being bitten. And yet no one, yet there's no, I mean, it's going, and imagine all of this with a Trump presidency, with the full weight of his, insanity behind
and,
it.
And the police, and the police unleashed, I think is a really, scary thing. I mean, the pushback against the police through the Black Lives Matter movement and all the support they've been getting. And they, there's really been a serious challenge to the power of the police unions. It's, you know, it's just starting to really play itself out. And maybe we only haven't even seen, you know, the results of it. And, you know, who knows where it would have gone under Hillary Clinton. But, I mean, they backed Trump with a vengeance, the police unions. So it's that's another thing to look at. Well, listen, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you, Paul. Right. I appreciate your show.
All right. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives, Donald Trump will be the next president of the United States, as we all know. How did this happen? What does it mean for immigrants, people of color, and women? We'll take your calls live on the air. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. 10:15 on Flashpoints, Greg Palast joins Dennis Bernstein for an Election Day post-mortem on voter intimidation. Also, the pipeline, how Bay Area financial firms fuel the fracking boom. 11 at 11 on The Dirtbag, host Glenn Andreessen and host and guest Jim Gilbert discuss plastic culture, fruit trees, and rhubarb. And you can get your answers to your gardening questions. And as always, we thank all you KBOO members for your generous support. And we thank all you listeners who are not members for listening and tuning in, but we wish you would become members. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on donate. So I'm speaking with Jacqueline Keeler, my once a month co-host here for the time being, if she doesn't flee us to Canada, which we hope she doesn't, but obviously we understand given the scenario what's going on. So let's go right to Deanna, who's back on. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning, Paul and Jacqueline. Thank you so much for this conversation, which far from being a superficial conversation, is really getting right down to it. And while I really applauded what I think it was Joshua called to say, because I think he's so right about how everybody just looked the other way, wasn't afraid about all these things that Obama was doing, I also recognize the truth of every word that Jacqueline is saying, and it is horrific now if you are a person of color, if you are a Native American, a brown-skinned person. It is unbelievable, and which is why I told everybody, don't you dare allow this to happen. Well, we allowed it to happen. I want to say that I really do hope that this is an unmasking of the, what did you call it, Paul? Americans?
Well, yeah, it's my little catchphrase. Yeah, we are Americaners, you know,
yeah,
corresponding to the Afrikaners,
right,
in
and
South
Africa.
And
the thing is, the guy who cried and hugged the white guy who cried, no. What a luxury. No. No fear. Jacqueline's right. Look at the people at Standing Rock. Look what they're going through. We cannot afford to cry. I mean, yes, for the minute, right? But, man, we better get our act together now. And, of course, standing and so forth. But I mean everybody who has ever had a thought about standing up against this United States of greed and domination and the expanding empire for which it stands, founded upon the anti-human doctrine of domination and carrying out these laws to the present day, including Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who cited the doctrine of discovery, which we call the doctrine of domination, starting here on Great Turtle Island and invading indigenous peoples throughout the world. This is the reality, yes, of our country. It is, as Ajama Umi says, a criminal enterprise, and the sooner we wake up, all of us, to that reality, which is staring us in the face in a very grotesque and horrible way right now. Man, we better get going. Thank you.
Bravo. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, a counterpoint to all this terribleness that has happened in the last 24 hours with the prospect of a Trump presidency, I call to mind an alternate America, an alternate relationship with our past. Last week, over 500 clergy came to Standing Rock, came up to and stood with the people, with the Ocheti Shakowin, the great Sioux Nation, and they went in their robes and singing songs, went right to the police that were in that totally military police in that line, and they said that you need to honor the treaties. You know,
and I hear some police actually turning their badges. I don't know if we're overplaying that, or
some of the, you know, the Hanneman Police Department decided that was not the appropriate use of their, you know, some of them have pulled out. Yeah, and they came, you know, my family, I had lived on Standing Rock for about 40 years. We're Yankton, Yankton, Dakota, but we lived and served the communities of Standing Rock for 40 years. And we did that as Episcopal priests. And that may sound odd, but my ancestor, Owlman, was a very famous medicine man, and he had a vision, and his vision was that we would continue serving the spiritual needs of our people through the Episcopal Church for four generations. And so, you know, the song that they sang was an Episcopal Dakota hymn. And I don't know that my family are really Christian anymore. I mean, since the 1970s, people have sort of returned back to our traditions since they've been, you know, legalized. They were actually against the law. But those were the hymns that were sung in the church my grandmother went to, these Dakota hymns. This was a hymn sung by the Dakota 38. The Dakota 38 were Dakota men who were found guilty of participating in the Dakota Sioux uprising in Minnesota. And in Minnesota, in 1863, the children were starving and the treaties were not being honored. And so the people rose up and they were driven out of Minnesota and forever. Basically, and bounties were put on their heads, you know, the whole Redskins thing, and 38 Dakota men were mass hung. It's the largest mass hanging in U.S. history, and Lincoln ordered it, although he greatly reduced the number of people who were hung from the original, like hundreds, and then two leaders were hung later, but so they call them Dakota 38 plus 2. And this hymn was the hymn they sung while they were on the gallows. And this is the hymn that the clergy sang to the police at Standing Rock. And it was so moving because this hymn is actually sung to a Dakota tune, which is the song we sing for the dead in our traditional way. But it's also about rebirth, about that sort of grounding with who you really are, with the Creator. And, you know, I'm not a really spiritual person. I have a deep respect for my traditions, and in that sense I'm spiritual, but I'm not someone who goes around, you know, performing that or pushing that on other people or anything. But I was, you know, I was looking at that and I was thinking, this is an undoing. What's going on in North Dakota is by my family, and I have an aunt who's an elder there at the camp, is described as a ceremony. We're doing a ceremony. And this ceremony has a purpose, and the purpose is healing. The purpose is the regeneration of our people. You know, the purpose is justice. And this ceremony that these people who had been part of a system that oppressed us, taking place and advocate and standing with us on the front lines, even going to jail. About, I think, 14 or 16 of the clergy did go to jail and refuse bail out of solidarity. And this is the America. This is the America that we want. You know, this is the one where we are unified for justice, where we can get beyond our ideas and our boxes and act as one people, even if we don't agree on certain things. You know, even if we have different ways of worshiping and different, you know, whatever, we can work together for what is right, the bigger picture. And that's what I see going on in Standing Rock. But I do admit that with Trump's election, I am really worried because, you know, Obama was didn't approve federal funds for more military response. He denied North Dakota the extra money. And so North Dakota has been borrowing the money from its own bank. I think they've now borrowed $10 million for this military response against
from the one state bank that exists.
Yes, yeah, I know. From to fight the Dakota people, you know, the peaceful praying Dakota and Lakota people.
So I just I hate to say this, but it's the one thing that came to mind, you know, as you were saying that Native ceremonies were prohibited. So, if, you know, you're saying this is a ceremony, you know, ceremonies have been outlawed before. And, you know, this is something that hasn't been talked about, Trump, and we will talk about it, is, you know, his whole relationship with Native Americans through his casinos and through fighting tooth and nail against Native casinos, and just the racist, terrible anti-Native American things he said, and as you said, his you know, I think he has a deep dislike, deep whatever for well, he's a racist apparently, seems like. And but for Native Americans in particular, I don't know if it's just because of his business interests or if it goes deeper, probably both. But so terminating treaties, I mean, you know, that's something the Republicans have been, you know, that's been ever since the termination period in the 50s, well, way before. There's been an ongoing thread that sort of comes and goes, you know. Yeah. That must be just a horrible thing to look at.
You know, the Supreme Court, in Indian federal law, they term us as domestic dependent nations. That was the first term brought up by the first Chief Justice, Justice Marshall, and then he's the one who combed through all these legal documents. He's trying to invent basically a legal foundation for a brand new country, and he found this papal bull, which is called the Doctrine of Discovery, which basically says that only Christian discovering nations have the minute that they land on a place that does not have Christian people on it, then all the title of that land immediately goes to them. Like, and this is a human rights violation because basically it's saying that we don't have, that Native people don't have the right to our land. And so this is this was something that the clergy, they actually burned a copy of the Doctrine of Discovery at the Chaiti Shakuin camp there. And so that was really amazing. And so I think that, and it's just, but Trump, just judging by what I've heard and seen of him, he seems to be vindictive and to hold grudges and to act on them. And if he has the power to do it, he will do it. I think Native American tribes have angered him by challenging him in the business world, as far as with the casinos, actually doing better than him, because, of course, most of Trump's casinos are going through bankruptcy now. And Native casinos continue. I know that he definitely had racist ideas about what he thought a Native person should look like. Of course, back east, the genocide was really terrible, and many tribes, you know, married, you know, other people, and you know, they look like all different racial groups now, but they are still politically a nation, you know. So what I define us as is suppressed nations. The treaties that were being invoked in North Dakota, like the 1851 treaty, were ratified by the Senate. And these, they do not ratify treaties with anyone but other sovereign nations. So that is basically an acknowledgement by the U.S. In the international scene that we are sovereign nations.
Well, we have, I don't know if we can get to one last quick caller, Mark Colinas, maybe, if you can just make a brief comment or question. Hello? Oh, I guess my engineer's...
Yeah, my name is Bartolinas, and I'm coming from South America. I'm a migrant in this country for about probably 20 years in different cities and things like that, working for anything. And my perception is, first of all, I'm a native, okay? I belong to the Coyasuyo, and I belong to the native nations from the Quechuas and Aymaras. And so just let you know, all these migrants, the ones Trump is against and has a nasty feelings, like the Mexicans. The Mexicans are the same, any Central American, any South American. For him and his people, is the same hatred, the same odio, hate. against us. He doesn't, when he talks all this time, he doesn't have any much hate. He's showing so much hate, more than the terrorists. When he talks about the terrorists of, you know, the Middle East, the ISIS, and all this stuff, he doesn't have that hatred. And that is a cultural from U.S. because I'm saying my perspective, you know, as a migrant working here in U.S. for more than around 20 years, my friend.
Hey, we got to go. I'm really sorry, but we're just at the end of our program. I wish we could have gotten you on earlier. I would have liked to hear more and engage with you a little bit. I apologize for that. But thank you for sharing that with us. And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I've been here with Jacqueline Keeler talking about this. And there's going to be more for the next hour. So stay tuned and call in during the next hour. Thank you very much. This has been Paul Rowland with Wednesday Talk Radio. Thanks, Jacqueline.
Sure.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to sponsor People's Health Clinic Benefit Party, Saturday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center in Portland. People's Health Clinic is a volunteer-run clinic that hosts a walk-in at Sisters of the Road every third Friday of the month. Services include naturopathic medicine, acupuncture, massage, herbalism, and more. This party will feature live music, an herbal cocktail bar, food, raffles, and more. Again, that's People's Health Clinic Benefit Party, Saturday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center, 400 Southeast 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Stepping Outside Polite Conversation Evening with the Tar Sands Valve Turners, Wednesday, November 16th at 7 p.m. at the Sunnyside Community House in Portland. Hear five of the Tar Sands Valve Turners share stories of their nonviolent direct